Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Health Report and Explorations, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, let's do it again. It's time to improve your American English and hear about important events at the same time. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington with As It Is. We will begin today with news from Cambodia that has to do with visas and the sex trade. Then we will visit an American city that had a serious problem with its drinking water. What caused the problem and how was it solved? Stay with us to find out. Now, on to part one. Cambodia says it has asked China to restrict the number of visas it gives to unmarried Cambodian women. Cambodian officials believe that such restrictions will prevent make-believe or sham marriages between Cambodian women and Chinese men. Marcia James has more.
An increasing number of Cambodian women are finding their way into sham Chinese marriages. Many are becoming victims of human trafficking for the purpose of forced labor or sex. Chu Bong Ung is Cambodia's Secretary of State for the Ministry of Interior. She also heads the National Authority Against Human Trafficking. She says restrictive visas will help lower the number of trafficked women. She says the government sent a letter to the Chinese embassy in Phnom Penh. The letter reportedly says many Cambodian women are suffering after being tricked into sham marriages. A spokesman for Cambodia's Ministry of Foreign Affairs says the government has asked for China's cooperation. Spokesman Khoi Kung says the appeal also went to Chinese embassies in Laos, Vietnam, and Thailand, where Cambodian women may request for visas. He says China has started to have stronger restrictions on visas because the problem keeps getting bigger. But a Chinese embassy spokesman, Chen Hongbo, says he cannot say if China is prepared to restrict visas. He says only that China is ready to work closely with Cambodia on the issue.
In between the two countries, I think that we should put more emphasis on that to cooperate more closely to deal with this issue.
The rights group Ad Hoc says it received 108 reports of cross-border trafficking during the first 6 months of the year. Nearly 300 people reportedly were involved. 29 of them had gone to China. Lim Mani of Ad Hoc says trafficked women who escaped from China have reported sexual abuse, overwork, and starvation. She says some of the victims took drugs in an effort to take their life, while others went into hiding. Some have been kept as slaves. She adds that traffickers working to set up fake marriages have a deep organization inside Cambodia and China. One victim was Chan Rundal, which is not her real name. She told VOA that her family was persuaded by a middleman to send her to be married to a man in China. In exchange, her family would receive money every month. Instead, she says, she was taken by a human trafficker and raped. She says she was then given to a Chinese man who let her live with him in rural China. Chan Rumdal says she thought she would only have one husband, but was forced to change from one Chinese man to another. She escaped to call her mother, who turned to Ad Hoc for help. She finally returned home and reported the trafficker to the group. The trafficker has yet to be caught. Chen Bo Ung says her office will take action on any complaints that reach her office. But Ad Hoc says many victims have reported complaints and government officials have refused to take action. I'm Marcia James.
You are listening to As It Is from Washington. The American city of Toledo, Ohio, faced a serious problem earlier this month. 400,000 people could not drink from the city's public water supply. The water comes from Lake Erie. It was polluted with a toxin or harmful substance linked to the overgrowth of algae. Too many of these simple organisms can lead to harmful algal blooms covering a large area. The water in Toledo is now safe to drink, yet harmful algal blooms are not going away anytime soon, either in the United States or around the world. Jonathan Evans has more.
The harmful algae entered Toledo's water intake pipes and turned the water green. People had to depend on bottled water supplies. Lake Erie supplies water to 11 million people in the north central United States. Algal overload is common in waterways worldwide. It results from chemical fertilizers polluting water supplies and poor waste treatment systems. Laura Johnson is a researcher with the National Center for Water Quality at Heidelberg University in Tiffin, Ohio. She says overgrowth of algae can reduce oxygen levels in water and kill fish. It can also damage the human nervous system and liver. Climate change is making the problem worse. Changing weather systems produce stronger, more intense winds and storms. These can take minerals and other important nutrients away from the land. The U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration studies algal blooms from space. Richard Stump is an oceanographer with NOAA. This information helps scientists and government officials to take action. Richard Stump says NOAA is also gathering information on phosphorus, a chemical that fuels the reproduction of algae. Laura Johnson says the long-term goal must be to keep nutrients on the land. Activists for clean water want the government to enact stronger controls. They also want to persuade farmers to cut back on fertilizers by paying them. Farmers often resist additional rules and recently faced a reduction in federal assistance. As the debate continues, one thing is clear. The algal problem is not going away anytime soon. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Now it's time for you to print the stories you just heard and then download the audio as a podcast. Then practice, practice, practice your American English reading and speaking. We urge you to use the Learning English website as much as you can. The best part is you can learn to speak American English for free. This is VOA, the Voice of America.
The Health Report is next, followed by Explorations. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health Report. Why do we need sleep? Is bedtime just a time for dreaming? Do our brains turn off for the night? What if I told you that scientists recently discovered that our brains may be just as busy at night as they are during the day? While we sleep, our brains are doing much more than getting ready for the next day. Researchers at the University of Rochester found that the brain may be busy cleaning house, cleaning out harmful waste materials. As with many studies, the researchers turned to mice for help. They studied mice that had colored dye injected into their brains. They observed the mice brains as they slept and when they were awake. The researchers say they saw that the brains of sleeping mice were hard at work. Dr. Maiken Niedergaard led the study. The brain expert says our brains perform two very different jobs. It seems they have daytime jobs. Later, they moonlight at a nighttime job. Moonlighting is working a nighttime job in addition to a day job. And this study says that is what our brains seem to be doing, working an extra job at night without additional pay for overtime.
When we are awake, the brain cells are working very hard at processing all the information about our surroundings, whereas during sleep, we really work very, very hard on removing all the waste that build up when we are awake.
The researchers say that the waste material includes poisons or toxins responsible for brain disorders such as Alzheimer's disease. They also found that during sleep, the brain's cells shrink or become smaller. This shrinking permits waste to be removed more effectively. Dr. Niedergaard says these toxins end up in the liver. There, they are broken down and then removed from the body.
So our study suggests that we need to sleep because we have a macroscopic cleaning system that removes many of the toxic waste products from the brain.
The brain's cleaning system could only be studied with new imaging technologies. The test animal must be alive in order to see this brain process as it happens. Dr. Niedergaard says the next step is to look for the process in human brains. She said the results demonstrate just how important sleep is to health and fighting disease. The research may also one day lead to treatments to prevent or help fight neurological disorders. And from VOA Learning English, that's the Health Report. I'm Anna Mateo. Do you have trouble sleeping? Not being able to sleep is called insomnia. For more information on how to get a good night's sleep, go to our website at learningenglish.voanews.com.
Thank you. Welcome to Explorations in VOA Special English. We continue our history of the American space program with the flight of Apollo 11. Today, Shirley Griffith and Steve Ember tell how America met its goal of placing astronauts on our only natural satellite by the end of the 1960s.
20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10.
A rocket launch countdown, a common sound in the 1960s. But this was not just another launch. It was the beginning of a historic event. It was the countdown for Apollo 11, the space flight that would carry men to the first landing on the moon.
Tower clear.
Roger all.
The ground shook at Cape Kennedy, Florida, the morning of July 16, 1969. The huge Saturn V rocket moved slowly up into the sky. It rose perfectly. Someone on the launch crew spoke the words, "Good luck and Godspeed." In the spacecraft, at the top of the speeding rocket, were three American astronauts whose names soon would be known around the world. Neil Armstrong, Edwin Aldrin, and Michael Collins. Neil Armstrong was the commander of the spacecraft. He was a test pilot. He had flown earlier on one of the two-man Gemini space flights. Armstrong was a calm person, a man who talked very little. Edwin Buzz Aldrin was pilot of the Moonlander vehicle. The astronauts gave it the name Eagle. Aldrin had flown on the last of the Gemini flights. He also was a quiet man, except when he talked about space. Michael Collins was the pilot of the command module vehicle, Columbia. He also had made a Gemini flight. He would wait in orbit around the moon while Armstrong and Aldrin landed and explored the surface. Collins was very popular and always ready with a smile.
2.5 minutes after the Apollo 11 launch, the first stage rocket separated from the spacecraft. 12 minutes later, the spacecraft reached orbit. Its speed was 29,000 kilometers an hour. Its orbit was 165 kilometers above the Earth. This was the time for the crew to test all the spacecraft systems. Everything worked perfectly. So the NASA flight director told them they were go for the moon. They fired the third stage rocket. It increased the speed of the spacecraft to 40,000 kilometers an hour. This was fast enough to escape the pull of the Earth's gravity. Apollo 11 was on its way to the moon. In 77 hours, if all went well, Apollo 11 would be there.
Halfway to the moon, the astronauts broadcast a color television program to Earth. The broadcast showed how the astronauts lived on the spacecraft. It showed their instruments, food storage, and details of how they moved and worked without gravity to give them weight. The television broadcast also showed the Earth behind Apollo 11. and it showed the moon growing larger in the blackness ahead. As hours passed, the pull of the moon's gravity grew stronger. Near the moon, the astronauts fired rockets to slow the spacecraft enough to put it into moon orbit.
Apollo 11 circled the moon while the crew prepared for the landing. Finally, spacecraft commander Armstrong and NASA flight controllers agreed it was time to separate the lander module Eagle from the command module Columbia. Armstrong and Aldrin moved through the small opening between the two spacecraft. Then they moved Eagle away from Columbia. Armstrong reported, "The Eagle has wings." The lunar module was ready. Men were about to land on the moon. On Earth, all activity seemed to stop. President Richard Nixon gave federal government workers the day off to watch the moon landing on television. Around the world, 500 million people watched the television report. Countless millions more listened on their radios.
Armstrong and Aldrin fired the lander rocket engine. The firing slowed the spacecraft and sent it down toward the landing place. It was in an area known as the Sea of Tranquility. The lunar lander, controlled by a computer, dropped toward the airless surface of the moon. 140 meters from the surface, the astronauts took control of the lander from the computer. They moved Eagle forward, away from a very rocky area that might have caused a difficult landing. The voices of Aldrin and Armstrong could be heard in short messages.
Forward. Forward. Dead. 40 feet down, 2.5. Picking up some dust. 30 feet, 2.5 down. Make shadow. 4 forward. 4 forward, drift into the right a little. 30, 2.5.
30 seconds.
Forward, just. Dead. Ready? Back right. Okay, engine stop.
Armstrong reported.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
NASA's plan had called for the astronauts to test instruments, eat, and then rest for 4 hours before leaving the Eagle. But Armstrong and Aldrin asked to cancel the 4-hour sleep period. They wanted to go out onto the moon as soon as they could get ready. NASA controllers agreed. It took the astronauts more than 3 hours to complete the preparations for leaving the lander. It was difficult, in Eagle's small space, to get into spacesuits that would protect them on the moon's surface.
Finally, Armstrong and Aldrin were ready. They opened the door. Armstrong went out first and moved slowly down the ladder. At 2 hours 56 Greenwich Mean Time on July 20th, 1969, Neil Armstrong put his foot on the moon.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
The world could see the history-making event on television. But the man who was closest to what was happening, Michael Collins, could only listen. He was orbiting the moon in the command module Columbia. It did not have a television receiver.
Armstrong moved carefully away from the Eagle. He left the cold black shadow of the lander and stepped into the blinding white light of the sun. On Earth, all was quiet. No sound came from televisions or radios. no one felt able to talk about what was happening. Armstrong began to describe what he saw. The surface appears to be very, very fine grain, like a powder. I can kick it loosely with my toes. I can see footprints of my boots in the small, fine particles. No trouble to walk around.
Aldrin appeared on the ladder. Down he came, very slowly. Soon, both men were busy placing experiments to be left behind on the moon. They collected more than 30 kilograms of rock and soil to take back to Earth. They moved easily and quickly, because the moon's gravity is 6 times less than Earth's. Hours passed. Too soon, it was time to return to the Eagle. Armstrong and Aldrin re-entered the lander. They rested for a while. Then they began to prepare to launch the lander for the return flight to the orbiting command module.
Listeners on Earth heard the countdown from Tranquility Base. 3, 2, 1. First stage engine on ascent. Proceed. Beautiful. 26, 36 feet per second up. Very smooth, very quiet ride. Eagle was flying. Man had been on the moon for 21 and one half hours. Eagle moved into the orbit of the command module. It connected with Columbia. Armstrong and Aldrin rejoined Collins in the command ship. They separated from Eagle and said goodbye to it. The lander had done its job well.
Eight days after it started its voyage to the moon, Apollo 11 splashed down in the Pacific Ocean. Left behind on the moon were the footprints of Armstrong and Aldrin, an American flag, and scientific equipment. Also left forever on the moon is a sign with these words. Here, men from the planet Earth first set foot on the moon, July 1969 AD. We came in peace for all mankind.
Our program was written by Marilyn Rice Cristiano, Shirley Griffith, and Steve Ember were our announcers. I'm Mario Ritter. Join us again next week when we continue the story of the Apollo spaceflight program on Explorations.